You're the fastest I've ever seen. Did anyone ever time you? I think that would be we could get all the tape ministers from all over the world together and okay. Turn. You'd win, I'm pretty sure. But don't think that you're doing it. Because in 1 second you'll be in last place. By Krishna's mercy, we're able to do anything nicely. That's actually the secret of strength of an exalted devotee. He's not kartaham, thinking, I am the doer. Prabhupada never said, just see how I have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world by my power and my purity. And I am empowered by Lord Chaitanya, great Sakyavash avatar. No, he was never in that mood. He said, if there is any credit that I have, it is due to that I have followed my spiritual master. It is by his mercy. He is always with me. It is my spiritual master's doing it. I am just assisting, things like that. Even giving credit to all the disciples, all you have done it all. My Guru Maharaj has sent you. Never thinking I am the doer. Not kartaham, because that is ahankara vimudatma. But on the other hand, so that was how the person without knowledge thinks. But in 28, one who is in knowledge of the absolute truth. So this Almighty Om does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. So what is the difference between the person in ignorance and the other person? It is the knowledge that they have. And what is that knowledge? Primarily that we are not our body. That this life is not all in all. We are eternal. We have lived for so many lives, just like we have in this body. A few years ago, I was in Hong Kong, and I hadn't been there for many years, and I saw someone who was talking to me, and they said, it was like we knew each other from a different life. And because different times in our life are like different lifetimes in many ways. So we passed through so many lifetimes even in this life. And this time right now is just a spot of time. And our whole life within this body is a spot of time. It is like a flash of lightning. Just a moment. And yet we are thinking it's everything. And that is our illusion. That is our ignorance. But knowledge means that I am the consciousness. I'm soul. I don't have anything to do with this body, but this body is an opportunity. Human life is an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. So I should not misuse my human life and act in ignorance. I should act in this knowledge. So one person is working thinking, I am the doer, is everything. And the other person is working, I'm a soul. I have this nature. I have this situation. Let me use it in Krishna's consciousness, let me be detached. Right next to each other. They're sitting next to each other. But there's a world of difference due to what? Knowledge. And because knowledge makes the difference in everything we do, therefore the different stages of life, knowledge makes the difference. Therefore, the next chapter will focus on this point, and it is called transcendental knowledge. Bewildered. So these are the two. One is bewildered, one is not bewildered. But yet they both should work. But for different reasons, they should both work. So bewildered by the modes of material nature, text 29, the ignorant fully engaged himself in material activity and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them. Very interesting. Although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Why should the wise not unsettle them? Because the principle that they have to work. Everyone must work, because if people don't work and they have passion and ignorance in them, they're going to get themselves into the worst trouble. I may have mentioned this in one of the opening classes, but the example that's most clearly in my mind about this is the hippies in the 60s. They got the idea of the ridiculousness of the 9-to-5 corporate world and business world and having a job and just working in that way. So they saw that was foolish and they criticized it. And they gave up work. But what did they do? They did the most abominable things and caused the most trouble. Because they gave up work, but they had so much passion and ignorance in them, so they, intoxication, just horrible things, social unrest, illicit connections. So this is why the principle of engaging people is so important, because if people get discouraged in their work, even though their materialistic work is inferior, their not working will even be worse. So therefore, Krishna says in text 30, and this verse is very important, and Prabhupada says in the purport, this verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Mayi Savani Kamani. Mayi means unto me. Savani, all. Kamani, work. Unto me, all work. Sanyas yat yat machetasa. Nirasir nimamo bhutva. Yudasva vigata jara. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your work unto me. So this is even higher than detachment from the fruit of one's work. Better than being detached is giving everything to Krishna. And this is really fulfills the purpose of detachment. Surrendering on your work unto me with full knowledge of me. What does that mean? Knowing our relationship, that I am your eternal master, you are my eternal servant. You without desire for profit, with no claims to proprietorship. And Vigata Jara means freedom from lethargy. Because for most people, if there is nothing in it for them, they will do nothing. In Hong Kong, you know it yet, the saying? The Chinese saying? There's a saying, because Hong Kong is a very materialistic city, there's a saying, Mo Chin Mo Gong. Sounds good, huh? It means no money, no talk. They won't even give you the time of day if there is no profit in it for them, in telling you. They'll be so nice to you if you walk into the shop. Oh, come in, sit down, how are you today, please, very nice, because they want some money from you. But if there is mo chin, no money, mo gong, no talk, that is the code of Hong Kong. So if there is no material motive, most people get lethargic. If there is no material motive, there is no motive. So therefore, how did Prabhupada encourage the book distribution? Competition, become number one, etc., 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 etc. Did it actually make a difference to Prabhupada who is number one and who is number two and this and that? And no. Does it actually make a difference to a spiritually advanced person, maybe I shouldn't be preaching like this, I'm not sure. But sometimes we need a little material motivation to make sure that we don't get into lethargy, a lethargic feeling. So it was just basically a transcendental trick. Because without desire for profit, with no claim to proprietorship, sava upadhi vinirmuktam, all upadhis finish, and yet free from lethargy, with full motivation. Now it's very, very hard to do that. When there is nothing in it for me, to still be fully motivated to do it is not easy. So therefore, we shouldn't laugh at those who have or are ignorant and don't have much knowledge and don't realize that they're the body and are motivated by fruit of, because they are me. I also have that, because all you need is a little bit of motive passion, and that's you. You have motive passion produces that desire for something, for some return on everything you do. So, full knowledge of Krishna. If someone actually has full knowledge of Krishna, what does that mean? That they're fully living in the relationship that I am Krishna's servant. That is sambandha jnan. They know their relationship with Krishna, and therefore they are practicing pure devotional service. And therefore they won't be lethargic, and their pleasure is not taking, but just giving to Krishna. So surrendering all work unto me, Krishna, with full knowledge of Krishna, without desire for profit, subtle or gross, with no claims to proprietorship, and yet free from lethargy, Krishna tells Arjuna, now do your duty and fight. And that is advanced consciousness. And that consciousness is actually, it is called nishkam karma. It is situated in the mode of goodness. It is beyond bodily consciousness. And it is the threshold to exalted Krishna consciousness. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Very difficult, especially in Kali Yuga, because everyone is so attached to being independent and doing what they want instead of what they're told. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult, may make things very difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna. If we have that relationship with Krishna, where we fully depend on Him, then everything will be glorious. And why? Because it is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desire of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord. Exalted Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada even says, Arjuna did not even have to consider the order of the Lord. He had only to execute that order. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions. So remember what we talked about yesterday about the system of sacrifice when you're attached. This is on a different level. But same work, but on a different level of knowledge and consciousness. Those persons who execute their duty according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions, liberated. But those, on the other hand, contrast, who out of envy don't want to accept their position as Krishna's servant, disregard these teachings and do not follow them, are to be considered bereft of knowledge, befooled, ruined in their endeavors for perfection. So, which one do we want to be? We become free from the bondage of fruitive activities, or befooled and ruined in our endeavors for perfection. The difference is knowledge, and the difference is surrender. Now, what forces one, what makes one make the wrong decision here and do the wrong thing and not follow Krishna's order, which is, and that is what Krishna explains in text 33. That even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? There is such a strong tendency that we have conditioned natures So to break that nature of attachment to the fruit of one's work is very difficult. And it takes sadhana, it takes purification. And it takes good association, and it takes transcendental knowledge. I read something wonderful in the Bhagavatam when it described how association of exalted devotees was so important, and then it described what the quality of that association was. It says those who are advanced devotees are always talking about Krishna. So that means association with advanced devotees means hearing about Krishna. If you're associating with them and they're always talking about Krishna. So this is very important. Otherwise, without to try to repress, instead of getting purified, will cause so much trouble. Indriyas, indriyasyate, raga dvesha vyavastitau, taya nau vasham agaschet, tayasya paripantanau. So we have attachments and aversions in us. Raga dvesh, as Maharaj was speaking this morning, vyavastitau. These raga and veshas, our own attachments and aversions, have to be put under regulation. So there are principles. So this is continuing. This point, how to advance from attached to detached. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to their objects and the senses. That means that we all have it, raga and dvesh. We have attachments and aversion. It's our nature, but they should be regulated. Otherwise, one should not come under their control. Nowadays, it's a fashion even amongst the devotees to say, I want to be honest with myself. So I have this attachment. I like to drink alcohol, or I want to be honest with myself, therefore I'm going to do it. But that's not what Krishna says here. You want to be honest with yourself. You say, I have this attachment. But yet he says, you shouldn't do it. One should not come under the control of such attachments and aversions. Why? Paripantanau. It's such a word that sounds like what it is. It's a real stumbling block of a word. Paripantanau. So it means stumbling block. So being controlled by our own attachments and aversions are like stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So we, instead of being controlled by my raga and dvesha, my attachments and aversion, what is Krishna recommending here? You should do your duty, whether you like it or you don't like it. You should do your duty. You should do what you're supposed to do and not be controlled by attachments and aversions. And the last verse we'll read today, which summarizes it. It is far better to discharge one's own prescribed duty, even though faultily, because that's an excuse we often give, I can't do it very well, I'm not good at it. But it's better to do one's own duty, even if we do it faultily, than if we do another's duty, even if we can do that other duty perfectly. Destruction, even if we are destroyed in the performance of our own duty, it's better than engaging in another's duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So we'll end here. Now, what inspired me to read the third chapter wasn't because I wanted to actually speak about the verses that we've been speaking about for the last 4 days. What inspired me to do this chapter, that was all introduction to what I wanted to talk about, which was what we're going to start talking about tomorrow, which is Arjuna's question. And Arjuna asks, "Oh Krishna, you're speaking so nicely that I should do this and I shouldn't do that. But I find that sometimes, although I know what I should be doing and I want to do the right thing, sort of like a force comes, it seems, and almost against my will makes me do the wrong thing." Now, I know none of you have that experience, but Arjuna was explaining it. What is that force that makes you act against what's good for you and do the wrong thing against your desire, against your knowledge? And that's what we'll Arjuna's question in the next verse, in 36, and we'll speak about that. But we have to make sure that we're down at the kirtan on time and smile and dance. Hare Krishna. Okay, we saw it's just that. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Vansha Kaupati. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale. Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Taramani. In the third chapter, Krishna glorifies performance of prescribed duties. Why? We have spent so much time explaining why. Because we need to be active. That activity should elevate us in consciousness. And we should make sure that our activity, even if motivated by some desire for selfish sense gratification, we should ensure that that does not degrade us. Therefore, that activity should be in line with the Shastra, the Vedic authorities, prescribed duties, that which is given by the spiritual master. Even if we are attached to those duties, the fruit of our work, we should do the duties, and gradually, because we are surrendering to authority in accepting that I must do this because I've been ordered to do it. The Shastra says, my spiritual master says, I must do it. Inherent in that duty is controlling our mind, not letting it fall under the sway of what I like, what I don't. That which binds us in the material world is duality, the perception that this is good and this is bad. How does that bind us? Our consciousness, the material, a conditioned soul's consciousness, is continually enwrapped in thinking, I want this, I don't want that, I have to act to get this, I have to act to make sure this doesn't happen to me. This is dvanva, moha dvanva. Itsta dvesha samutenam dvanva mohena bharata. This is the cocoon, the enwrapping on the conditioned soul that does not allow him the time to take to Krishna consciousness, what to speak of the desire. But just so much enwrapped in dvanva, dualities, itsta dvesha. But when one learns to not listen to the dualities, I like this, I don't like this, I feel like this, I should, just what the mind wants, and just surrenders to his prescribed duty, then naturally he's learning the art of controlling the mind, which is a great step in advancement in spiritual life. No longer is he under the control of passion, the desires of passion and of ignorance, practically speaking. He's situated in goodness, or he's in the beginning of situated in goodness. Even though the desires may be there, just by being fixed in one's duty, the mind falls under control, and gradually the desires, like a fire which is not fed any fuel, will gradually be extinguished. So the mind will gradually become calm and peaceful. That means that gradually, by performance of duties, with a little detachment in the beginning, the first detachment is I'm going to do it. And then gradually we give some of the fruit, even though we're attached to the fruit, and gradually complete detachment from the fruit of one's work develops as one progresses from passion to goodness. So Krishna clearly says not to fall under the control of this raga and dvesha, this attachment and aversion, because they are stumbling blocks on the path of liberation. Taryasya paripantanam. It is these things are stumbling blocks that stop us from doing what we should do. And Krishna, even before this, has said, if you follow your prescribed duties, you'll get liberated. And if you don't follow, you'll be, it's really heavy. You are bereft of knowledge, be fooled and ruined. So it's clear. Follow prescribed duties, make advancement. Don't follow, do what you want to do. Influenced by rag and dvesh, attachment and aversion, and go to hell. So it's very clear. But yet, we see, I examine my own life, and I see so many times, although I've known better, I've done the wrong thing. It's clear to me. The Shastra says, you do this, it'll be good for you, and if you don't do it, it'll be horrible for you. My conscience tells me that. My intelligence tells me the same thing, and yet I do the wrong thing again and again. Why do people act improperly if it's so clear what is to be done and what isn't to be done according to Shastra and Guru and Sadhu? So this is a very important question. Sometimes we even know what the right thing is. We even want to do the right thing, but there is a fever, a power in us almost that forces us to do the wrong thing. What is that? Arjuna is going to ask that. Atakeno, Arjuna says, Priyuktoyam, Papam Charati Purusha. Papam, that forces a man, what is it that forces a man to act sinfully? Sinfully means against Shastra, against what should be done, against prescribed duties. That is the definition of sin. Atakeno priyuktoyam papam charati purucha nichnam api varsnaya baladivana yojata. What is it that forces one, even against one's will, to do the wrong thing, even though you may know it's the wrong thing, even though some part of you doesn't want to do it? What is it that forces you to act improperly? This is Arjuna's question. It is a very important question, because failure to understand the answer to this question and understand what to do about this force that forces us to act improperly, we say it's Maya. But failure to understand what it is and what to do as remedial measure will most likely put us victimized by this force. It is a fever. It is the fever of passion, of calm, lust, desire. And it burns like fire, Krishna will explain. And actually it does infect the mind just like a fever, like a fire. I've known people who are gamblers. Of course, one of our rules that we strictly avoid is no gambling. But I see, or I knew them when I was a youth, I saw that they were infected with a fever. And sometimes our own mind will become feverish. I want to do this, I want to do this. I have to do it, I have to do it. I feel like it, I want to do it. Even though I've eaten so much, I want it, I want it. Even though I know it's going to cause my stomach so much trouble, I want to do it, I want it. Well, don't do it, it's bad, but I want to, I want to. Ah! What is that force that makes us act crazy like that and do things that are bad? Smoking. What is that forces people to smoke? On every package, it's written that it's going to kill you. It's smoke in the body. Completely unnatural. Coughing. And people still are smoking. They say, I smoke because I want to. And if I wanted to give it up, I would, but I don't want to. But try and give it up. Let's see. You can't. Hopelessly addicted, feverishly addicted to sense gratification. What is that force that puts that fever in the mind? Has anyone experienced this ever? I still feel some fever towards... No, good. It's only me. This fever This force that forces us to act improperly is our enemy. Krishna's going to explain this. O descendant of Rishni, Arjuna asked Krishna, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? And Krishna's answer is very clear. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha. This, Esha means this. This is Kam, lust. Krodha Esha, this is anger. Rajaguno Samud Bhava, it is born from Rajagun, the mode of passion. Mahashano Mahapapma. Mahashano means it is the great enemy. The great enemy. Sometimes we're in a fight with someone and we think he is my enemy. And sometimes we're, another country is thought as our enemy. And sometimes we think when we want to do something in Krishna's service and some people, non-devotees, get in the way, we think they are the enemies. But they are little enemies compared to this enemy, which is lust, our own lust, and it's living within us. Mahashano, the great enemy. It is Mahapapma, the greatest cause of sin. Vidyenam ihavarinam. It is the greatest enemy in this world. The Supreme Personality of God had said, it is lust only. That is the force, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion. That's Rajaguno Samudbhava. It is born from passion. And later, that passion, because the nature of the fire of desire is that it causes frustration, because it is impossible to become satisfied by satisfying your desires. The very thing that we think is going to make us happy, it will be the source of our misery, frustration, because it is not possible to satisfy this feverish mentality of lust. And therefore, because of the frustration that's caused, the next step is krodh, anger, which is born of the mode of ignorance. So passion goes to ignorance. Later it is transformed to wrath, anger, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. We naturally desire to love. It is our nature. We naturally desire to exchange affection. We naturally desire to open our hearts and to be kind and loving. We crave this. But if we take that lust and with that desire and engage it in the mode of passion, just trying to satisfy the senses, it will be the cause of our doom. But if we take that desire for love and affection and not engage it by the mode of passion, try to satisfy it through the combination of bodies, but rather offer that love and that loneliness that we may be feeling to Krishna and use that as energy, power to seek and open up our loving relationship with Krishna, that passion will be purified and turned into pure goodness gradually. It should not fall under the control of this lust. It is in our interest to not let it, because it usually does, but it is in our own interest not let our desires for these things degrade by the mode of passion into ignorance, etc. Text 38. Now Krishna gives three examples of the different degrees of covering over the heart by this kama, or lust. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as an embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. as fire is covered by smoke. There is fire, but smoke is there, as if a contamination. But yet, heat and light still come from the fire. Even though there is smoke coming, but heat and light are still coming from the fire, and the fire has use. That is one degree of lust. That is when our consciousness is covered by the mode of goodness. And just with a little tending, a little fanning, that smoky fire will burst stronger into flames, and there won't be any more smoke. So similarly, if someone is in the mode of goodness, he still is affected by lust, but with a little tending of that, he can become very easily Krishna conscious, which means that he is no more affected by lust. And actually, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami defines lust and love as opposites to each other. Krishnendriya Priti, do you know that one? Anyone know that verse? Priti. So when, you want to say the translation? Yeah. When we desire to satisfy our own senses, in other words, we are in the center, and we're desiring to satisfy our own senses, that is called lust. But when we desire to satisfy Krishna's senses, that is called love, prem. So real love is completely unselfish. There is no thought of one's self-interest. It's rather just pleasing Krishna. And that real love only will satisfy the soul. And the perverted reflection of that calm, when we're selfishly trying to satisfy our own senses, will never satisfy us. So when one is in the mode of goodness, the covering is less, like smoke covers a fire. And with a little tending, it can be quickly burst into flames, and it could be purely Krishna conscious and not affected by any lust. The next one is not the mode of goodness, but the mode of passion. As mirror is covered by dust, a thick covering of a mirror by dust, and that thick covering, it doesn't allow any use, practical use of the mirror. That is the mode of passion. So the consciousness can't actually be properly used in the mode of passion unless it is clean, cheto, darpana, marjanam. Unless that consciousness, the dust, is removed by the chanting of the holy names. But still, at least the mirror is visible. The dust is on it, and the mirror is visible, even though it can't be used. So it is a thicker covering than smoke covering fire, because the fire still can be used if it's covered by smoke. So this is compared to the mode of passion. And the embryo covering the womb, it constricts, or the womb covering the embryo, it constricts it. The embryo is covered by the womb. The embryo is constricted so much and cannot do anything. And not only that, because it's within the body, the womb, it cannot be seen. So the mirror can be seen, although it can't be used, and the fire can be used and seen. So this covering of the womb, covering the embryo, is the mode of ignorance, and compared to animals, that practically intelligence and consciousness cannot be seen at all, and no use. The fact that they're alive practically has no use, because their life is just engaged in eating and sleeping, etc., and there is no other choice. So these are the three different coverings of the living entity, yet the soul is one, in the sense that every living entity covered by either the mode of passion, goodness, or ignorance, they are souls. So how unfortunate it is when a soul becomes covered by this lust because it's so hard to remove it. It is so difficult to remove it. So hard to act as a spirit soul again. And the result of that is samsara dava nalalita loka. Birth after birth involved in the davanala, the forest fire of material life, which truly burns. It burns. So therefore in text 39, thus the wise living entities, pure consciousness, we are wise, all of us, becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Prabhupada explains in the purport, lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment. Just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. The fire is burning and is demanding fuel, and you say, let me give it some fuel and then it will be satisfied. And it won't demand anymore. But rather, it just grows in its intensity and its demands. And a fire is capable of consuming unlimited amounts of fuel. There's a little fire and you think it can only consume a little amount of fuel. And when you start giving it that fuel, it just grows and grows and grows and grows until it can burn down an entire city. That is like lust. And we think, oh, I have some material desire, let me satisfy it, and then I'll take the Krishna consciousness. Years ago when I lived in Gita Nagari, there was one famous, in our potato field, there was a weed, and we neglected this weed. And it grew so big, I can't remember exactly, we took pictures of it and everything. It was about this big, this one weed. And it took 10 people to pull it out. And that, why did we have to pull it out? Because it was about to go to seed. And that one weed came from one seed. And when it was ready to go to seed, it had thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of seeds on it that were ready to be go into the field. You have one? Oh, one more. Hare Krishna. Thank you. I thought you were going to say I had a big weed growing out of my head. Hare Krishna. There is very little chance of a moth becoming Krishna conscious because of the degree of covering over him. And what is the example of the moth? How there's a fire, you know, and he's so he has the fever of wanting to be near the light, so intense in his consciousness that he'll fly right into the fire every time. You can have 10 moths lined up, and each one can see the one before it flying to the fire and dying a horrible death, and each one will fly in. That is the potency of the fever of lust in the sense of sight. So no amount of fuel can extinguish a fire, rather the fire begins to blaze. So this weed was about to give birth. It was going to go into die and put its seeds down of thousands and thousands of other weed seeds. And the whole garden was going to be inundated with weed seeds. So similarly, if we cultivate a material desire, thinking that it will be finished with it by satisfying it, the result is not that it becomes satisfied, but on the other hand, exactly the opposite, it gives birth to thousands and thousands and thousands of other desires. If we don't become convinced about these things with our intelligence philosophically, then it will be very hard for us to continue strongly on the path, because naturally we'll think to try to satisfy our material desires. Prabhupada explains, lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness. But actually, that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. So we think it's wonderful and we feel some satisfaction, and to do without satisfying our desires is torture in one sense. But yet, going in the other direction and trying to satisfy the desires is even worse. It means long-term bondage in the material world.